Introduce our speaker for the night. We got this thing in AA, it's called a big book. It's where the program of AA is outlined. If you're anything like the alcoholic that's described in the big book, just not drinking, going to meetings will not achieve any sort of sobriety for you, right? And in that big book where the program is outlined, it says a little something like this. If you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in hearing this story tonight and think one of three things. Yes, that happened to me, or more important, yes, I felt like that, or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. I'm gonna have Carl come up and introduce our speaker.
How you guys doing? My name is Carl, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Carl.
It is my pleasure tonight to introduce my buddy Steve. If you don't hear anything he says tonight, hear this. The universe is a safer place with Steve sober. I can promise you that. Steve's a good buddy of mine, and he just moved here from California a few months ago, and so I don't know him all that well, but I've had some time to sit with Steve and get to know him. And he's one of the most honest and direct people I've ever met. He has an intensity that very few people will ever touch, but at the same time, a calmness that very few people will ever touch. And it's been an honor for me to get to know him. We go to the same meeting and we've got to spend some time together, and it's just been an honor to get to know Steve. It's been a blessing for Steve and his wife since they moved out here. They've really hooked up with a lot of people that I know. So I've had a chance to really see them a lot and see Steve and spend some time with him. And he's just a great guy. He really is. He works steps on a regular basis. He's just a guy that on the paper, he shouldn't be sober. You know what I mean? Like logically, like a guy like that shouldn't be sober. And he's got a long time sober, and he helps a lot of people. And he's just an amazing man. And with that, I'll give you Steve. Yeah.
My name's Steve, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
This thing on?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I just put it in my pocket, it'll be a a short message. That's a penis joke. Wow. Great to see you all tonight. And I'm a little bit nervous, and that's just because my ego wants you guys to like me. And that's total bullshit. And if you don't like me, it wants you to think what I think you should think of me. Can you relate to that? Yeah. So I've got that going for me. My sobriety date is March 6, 2002. I've gone through the steps a number of times. That's not bragging, just telling you it is what it is, and that's what I need to stay sober. I heard a guy, I think his name was Murderer Bill. He was in jail for 30 years, and I think he had the same amount of time as 40 years of sobriety, and he died, and they called him Murderer Bill for a reason. I'm gonna tell you some things tonight, and I'm not bragging, and I'm not lying. And I wish I could say I had a bunch of divinely inspired shit happen to me, but I haven't. So I'm going to talk about this book, and I'm going to talk about God, and I'm probably going to say fuck a lot, because that's what I do. So anyway, I was born pretty close, well not, I was born right up the road about 750 miles away. And I started drinking early. I don't remember how old I was when I had my first drink. I don't remember how old I was when I smoked my first cigarette. I don't remember how old I was the first time I smoked a joint. I do remember how old I was the first time I took pills, though, because I had to ask some questions. Hey, Jenny, have a seat. Great seat. No. So that I was in, I grew up in an environment where that's what everybody did. Everybody drank, everybody smoked, everybody fought, and that was just the way it was. This isn't going to be a long drunkalogue. I'm going to tell you my history briefly, and then I'm going to go through the steps and talk about how this program has saved my life and how it can save yours if you're willing to do the deal. I mean, it's not great. It's not a fucking 24-hour orgasm, but it's a lot better than it used to be. You know, I've got more of a buzz from God and doing the deal than I ever thought possible. And it's available to you, too. It just takes a little bit of work. It's not fun all the time, but it's a lot funner than it used to be. So I've tried to convince myself for the majority of my life how different I was from everyone else. I always felt different. And I've had some instances happen to me, and so has everybody else. But the catalyst, or what started my serious drinking and using and my serious amount of self-loathing, was when I was 9 years old, I accidentally shot and killed my cousin. We were playing inside of a house, and we lived with a bunch of motorcycle enthusiasts who sold drugs and had guns and did all that shit that people do in that situation. So he didn't die right away. I used to tell myself the gun just went off. You know, that's bullshit. A gun's a tool. It doesn't just go off. I just repressed that memory of pulling the trigger. So that's a bit of truth that I've uncovered, and it's not fun to stand up here and tell you that stuff, but the reality is I want to be free of that, because that's one of those things I think that separates me from you, which is nonsense, and that's going to make me drink. And maybe you hear something that you can relate to, and maybe you'll do the deal and get sober and stay sober. So I started selling pot at 10. I started selling cocaine at 12. And I didn't really have friends. I had people that I associated with because of the services they could provide. They either had cars, or they were bigger, stronger guys and they could collect, or whatever. So my drinking and using just went on like that, every single day. And for whatever reason, I ran through the raindrops. I never got caught. And about the time I was 17, I had acquired a group of knuckleheads I cruised around with. And a couple of those guys got hurt real bad. A couple guys went away. And I had to get out of where I lived. So I got rid of everything I had. That's a lie. I sold it. And then I went into the military. I found the hardest special forces that the American military can offer. I was fortunate. 10 days out of high school, I went to Navy boot camp, and then after that, I went to budge training, which is SEAL training. I'm not saying that to orally inflate myself. It's just part of the fucking story. So I did that from the time I was 19 until the time I was 29. I was stationed at two different SEAL teams, and during that time, I drank and used. I drank and used every day. Every day that I could. I mean, there's sometimes that you're underway on submarines and you're underway doing other stuff and it's not physically possible. I mean, the corpsman has Demerol and shit, and you know, maybe he'll hook you up if he's your pal. But that's what I did. And I drank and used nonstop. And I had innumerable alcohol-related incidents. I wrecked cars, got in fights. I was a liberty risk. And at the end of my 10 years in the military, I wasn't allowed to leave the barracks unless I had two guys with me. And the guys didn't want to go, because every time we go out with you, something bad happens. And you know, I've always been the shortest guy, just the way it is. And when they put you in rooms with the biggest dudes, and the biggest dudes don't want to go because you're a knucklehead and something's going to get broken, there were so many red flags that I just ignored, and I'm just lucky to be standing here today. So in 98, I got out and started a commercial real estate company and was successful. I showed up the same time, same place every day, and did that stuff, acquired buildings, acquired staff, the whole time I drank and used. And I hired guys that didn't have a problem going back and forth to Mexico for me, and they would get coke and they would get 500 or 600 Vicodin in a shot, and I would pay them time and a half and or miles to go down and buy it and hook me up. So I basically had my dealers employed by my company for me. So needless to say, I didn't get a bunch of work out of those guys. And that's just the way it was. And the 9/11 happened, and I'm an Arab speaker, and I have a bunch of time in and out of the Middle East, and I was completely useless. I couldn't do anything. I was totally addicted to drugs and alcohol. I was just sick and shaking and sweating, and I would drink and use, so I couldn't do anything except lay down and sweat. That was the only thing I could do. And so we were attacked, and then I got telephone calls because of my associations, and I couldn't do anything because I was completely useless. And about a month after that, I had a series of ODs, and I went to the emergency room. I came out of about a 5-day blackout in Las Vegas, surrounded by a bunch of people I didn't know. And I had a couple more pistols and a little bit more money and some more of everything else that I didn't take with me. So I called my wife at the time and told her what was going on, and my brother-in-law was also my doctor. So went, got hooked up in the hospital, and then I woke up a couple days later, strapped to the bed with a giant dude sitting there beside me who would not let me loose. And I'm glad he didn't, because I just would have got up and went out and drank and eat again. So they took me to the rehab facility, and I remember getting at the rehab facility, and we walk in, and it's like Ozzy Osbourne. I'm like, well, where's the fucking bar? I can't see. You know, I'm fine with getting off of coke and pills and pot, but where's the fucking bar? Are you kidding? There's no birthday party for me here. I'm going to bounce. So it didn't take, obviously. I had they had an orderly assigned to me for the first 2 weeks of my stay. You can imagine what he was about, probably 6'4", maybe 320, just an enormous dude. And he hung out with me for 2 weeks, you know, to, I don't know, because they thought it was a good idea. And and right when he split, I called a guy who worked for me, we'll just call him Freddie, and I said, hey man, I'm in a hospital, I need you to hook me up. And he's like, boss, you're in a hospital, I can't. I said, dude, you need to bring me a fucking Oscar Yale right now. Or I'm coming to your fucking house and I'm gonna kill everybody, I'm gonna burn your fucking house down. He said, all right, boss, I'll be there in 30 minutes. So that's a true story. Well, I was so consumed with self-centered fear and ego that if he wouldn't do that for me, then I would have stole a car or done something stupid and ended up in more trouble. But my addiction was convinced that I needed to feel something other than what I was feeling. So that's what it made me do. I'm sure you can relate on some instance that you've done something you didn't want to do because you wanted to get high or drunk or you wanted to feel different. So that's what I did. So Freddie came back, hooked me up, and I wasn't sober. And on March 5th, had a conversation with somebody who had been nicer to me than anyone had my entire life. And he said, I think you're still drinking and using, and I want you to go get a urinalysis. I said, yeah, fuck you. I don't care what you think. I'm not doing it. And then that second I realized, you know what? I'm completely, completely controlled by drugs and alcohol, just consumed with it, not. You know, I would say to people when I first started doing the steps, I would ask them when I was qualifying them, have you ever scratched until you bled just because it felt good? And if they couldn't say yes, I said, you know what, then you don't have the same thing that I have. Because that's what I have. That's what my addiction does to me. So I did end up getting sober on March 6, 2002. It's the day after that conversation. And then I went and I took a urinalysis every other day for 2 years. And I'm not saying that because I'm a good person. I'm saying that because I'm devious. I'm a manipulator. And I'll do whatever I can to get what I think I need. And at that point in time, it was what my addiction thought I needed, which has never been the answer. And the started going to meetings. I worked the steps to the best of my ability. And then I had a couple, about a year sober. And then Iraq started being what Iraq is. And I started doing some private military contracting. And the whole time I was doing private military contracting, I was doing commercial real estate stuff and going back and forth. And I still haven't been drinking. I have been acting out in other areas. And maybe you can relate. Maybe it's working out too much. Or maybe it's shopping too much. Or maybe it's driving too fast. Or driving too slow. Or maybe it's seeking attention from other people or people that you shouldn't be getting attention from. Or maybe it's being a jerk to people. So I was acting out like that until 2007. And then I had made the plan to where I was going to kill myself, but I was getting there. I was completely unhappy all the time. I was mean to everybody, and I was acting out in ways where it should have been blatant to the people that I was associated with, and it wasn't. So then I started doing this work as it's outlined in this book for the first time. And this is a sheet of things here that Bob gave me, that actually Lindsay gave to Bob. There are a bunch of great comments about these two.
What is this?
Oh, that's not true.
Oh, I'll say
no, anyway. In this book, it says, it's a story of how many thousands have recovered from alcoholism. Recovered. Now, that's amazing, because I had it bad. I didn't think the only answer for me was dead. And, you know, I was okay with that. That's as worse. Dead's as worse as it's going to be. I'm good. You know, something will finally end this nonsense that I'm feeling, this sense of self-loathing. And I'm fortunate I'm in a relationship with somebody who's in the program, and it's been a fucking absolute miracle in my life. And we pray and we meditate, and I steal a bunch of her material. But the I have delusions of mediocrity. So if everybody were to worship me, then I would feel just good enough about myself that I could crawl in here. That was the amount of self-loathing I was carrying around with me. And that's what my addiction was doing for me. I couldn't drink enough, I couldn't smoke enough, I couldn't snort enough, I couldn't do anything enough to fill that void, that God void that I had going on. And I was just convinced that I was so much different than everyone else. You know, I couldn't buy enough buildings, I couldn't buy enough houses, I couldn't make enough connections, I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that. It's like having a trash can without a bottom on it. And that's what I was doing. I was using everything I could to fill that up, and I just couldn't do it. So fortunately, this book has helped me out a great deal. And in this book, you'll see in the beginning, they used to have a circle and a triangle. And that was removed in 1994. And it's an ancient spiritual symbol that means mind, body, and spirit, whole. I mean, that's a big deal to an alcoholic like me and a drug addict, to be whole. To be able to feel that, just be okay. Now, I was searching for that, trying to get the chemistry just right. You know, trying to, just enough Coke, just enough Vicodin, just enough vodka. And then when I started getting a little too sketchy on that, maybe a little bit more vodka. I mean, just trying to get it right. And, you know, and then also in this book, it says there is a solution. I was like, a solution, finally, you know, because after 4 days, I start to hallucinate. You know, I said, what's the solution to that? You know, well, when they said, you don't have to feel this way anymore, I said, well, how's that possible? And they said, well, don't drink. Whoa. Now you're just being crazy. But anyway, in that triangle, Unity, service, and recovery. And unity, they're talking about this, the fellowship, how we support each other, how we help each other out. We agree that we're here to help other alcoholics and drug addicts recover. Service. Not that renting these places and cleaning up and picking up your cigarette butts and making coffee and driving people to meetings isn't important. What's really important is taking people through the steps. I am fortunate. I'm in a situation right now. I'm trying to help this guy out, and he keeps calling me while he's hammered. And you know what? You need to call me when you're sober before you drink. Because if you're willing to do the deal, then I'll do anything for you. But if you're just going to call me when you're drunk, I mean, wait. Save that for somebody else. And recovery. Recovery is found in this book. Body, mind, and spirit. We all know what that is. Okay, this is a textbook. So, means you read it and you study it. You do it in order. And then you're going to forget shit, so you're going to have to do it again. I mean, I am. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe you're different. I don't know. But I was convinced how different I was for a long time. So I had done all these things. I was completely driven and consumed and absorbed with self-centered fear. I lived my whole life on fear. And you're thinking, what? Are you kidding? But no, I absolutely did. I was a drug dealer because I was afraid. I went to SEAL training because I was afraid. I was point man in four platoons because I was afraid. I was afraid that everybody was going to find out how afraid I was. And fucking what? Somebody's going to see the truth? Somebody's going to see who the dude is behind the curtain? No fucking way. No way. I'm willing to do anything. Suffer whatever the suffering is so you don't have to see what the truth is, how I feel about myself, but I'm willing to do it. And now that means getting up and talking to people and hoping they can see that there's some God in me regardless of all that other nonsense. So, also, I'm going to jump around a bit. We have a physical allergy, a spiritual malady, and a mental obsession. The physical allergy, to me, is when I put that stuff in my body, I want more of it. And not just more. I want it till I can't do anything else. I need it to redline. I either want all of it or none of it. I got to do all of it. And it's whether that is alcohol, drugs, or anything else, it'll take me out of feeling how I'm feeling. So I don't have to feel anything because I'm more afraid of having a feeling than I am of anything else. At least that's been my experience. And then the spiritual malady. Always convinced that something outside is going to fix me. And you know what? That's not the truth. I've searched all over the place. And it's not going to. Only thing that will is this book and God. And I used to hate that. You come to AA meetings, what's another fucking God meeting? Seriously. like all these, are they getting money from the church? How's that working? You know, I was so brilliant. You know, this is a side door into the Bible or something or some other, or whatever religion you're calling it. And you know, trust me, I'm no fan of organized religion. I've seen what it can do on a global scale. And spirituality, I'm in there. But organized religion, I'm a little shy of that stuff. And a mental obsession. My mental obsession is me. I'm completely obsessed with myself. It's true. Tell me you can't relate to that, right? I'm the only one who has that one. I'm convinced that my life is supposed to look like this. It's supposed to look like this at 17. It's supposed to look like this at 25. It's supposed to look like this at 32. It's supposed to look like this at 40. Sure it is. Convinced that I'm supposed to feel great every second of every day, regardless. And you know, life isn't like that. Somebody's going to step on your neck. Somebody's going to try and take your lunch money. Somebody's going to be an asshole. Somebody's going to cut you off in traffic. And doing this work, you know, you don't have to pull that guy out of his car. You don't have to slam your car into his. You don't have to act like a jerk. Because the person in the line in front of you has 11 items instead of 10. Okay, now I'm going to go through the steps. because that's what got us here. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Powerless. Are you kidding me? Powerless? Seriously. I traveled here and I've done this. I've gone all over the planet and done stuff, but I can't drink alcohol and use drugs like a normal human being. No, you can't. But the reality is I'm powerless over everything. Only thing I'm not powerless over is my attitude. Now, because I can pause, say, you know what? Because everything, my first thought is just wrong about everything. Every single thing, my first thought, you know, let's just stop. They have a thing out here where 10-step buddies, we'll get into that, where you're having a problem and you call someone. That's new to me. So that's stopping and pausing. That's good stuff. So that's what we're doing. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. A power greater than me. When I work with guys and they have trouble with this, with the God word, and think you have trouble believing there's a power greater than you. Okay, well then fly around the fucking room. You know? Or breathe underwater. You know, seriously, you have trouble believing that there's a power greater than you. And the only reason I'm laughing is because I had it bad. You know? And, or my favorite one, take a fork and stick it into a light socket and tell me that there isn't a power greater than you. I don't recommend you do that, but I mean, that would be funny. You're so convinced that you're invincible that... But the reality is you don't have power over that first drink. And hopefully you'll do the steps and you'll get over it. Decision. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. You know, that's a tough one. Decision. You know, I made a decision in July when Bob asked me to come up here and speak. Sure, I'll do it. In August, sure, I'll do it. September, sure, I'll do it. October, you know what? Fucking here we are. We're doing it. That's a decision. You can make a decision. That's great. But you got to take the action. You know? Everybody can make a decision. The last step study we were at, they said 2 frogs decide to jump into the water from a log. How many are there? 2. Exactly. They decided. They didn't do it. So that's the way I see it. And the people I've worked with have seen it also. I could fill this up with those filler noises like the and the like. I can't do that. I did take notes and I prepared because I care about the message. I care about the program, even though I've never met 98% of you people. I mean, it's the fact that you're here and not drinking or out using or not being consumed with yourself, that's a miracle in itself. And I'm glad you're here. I hope you stay. Okay. 3rd step. I had trouble with the 3rd step, obviously. And the reason is because I'm selfish and self-centered. I wasn't convinced that any life run on self-will could hardly be a success because I had experienced success. I had succeeded in organizations where there was a high attrition rate. I had succeeded in business. I had all the crap you're supposed to have to be successful. And I wasn't. I was completely empty. I was completely empty. I hated who I was. I hated everything that I was associated with. And I was just a miserable, miserable person. So I don't recommend that, but that's where I was. Now we're on to the 4th step. Searching. That's a good one. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. No, I didn't want to do that. Because the first time I did it, the individual explained it to me that I should write down all the stuff that I did that I felt kept me separated from everyone else. And that's a long line of nonsense. You know, I stole this when I was 3 or whatever. Who the hell knows? But, I mean, all that crap you think that separates you from everyone else, this is about your resentments. This is about the people that you're mad at. That's my understanding. And whether that's 10 people, whether it's 110 or 210, whatever it is, write those people down and go through the resentment inventory on them so you can be free of that stuff. Because you can't take enough poison and kill somebody else. You can't. And that's what's going on. That person's occupying space inside your head and you're getting angrier. That person, place, or thing, organization, whatever it is. And you're using that resentment to damage yourself. Now go ahead. Using that resentment to damage yourself. And at some point in time, you're going to use that. Is that Carl? Go ahead, man. We can wait. No, but you're going to use that to act out. Because resentment, they say right here in the book, it's the number one offender. And if you think it won't kill you, you're mistaken. Because something's going to happen. You're holding on to that. It's like you're in prison. You're holding on to like a piece of steel as a weapon. Some point in time, you're going to need that. So you're holding on to it, and you're sharpening up and sharpening up and sharpening up. And then sooner or later, you're going to pull it out, and bam, that's the reason I need to go drink or go use or act out in whatever way. And it's been my experience, not my opinion, that after that first thing happens, then two is okay, and then four is okay, then 16, and then whatever 16 increases to exponentially. I don't have my calculator up there, but that's what's going to happen. And with the four step comes other inventories. It's your sex inventory. Go ahead and giggle. Nope, no giggles. Awesome. No, people normally giggle about that because they think, haha, we said sex. Yeah, we did. But what we're talking about is your relationship. Because some people will go through the steps in different ways. And they think that you should have this laundry list of what your partners and your experiences have been. And you should share this with that person. And I don't think that's correct. I think this has been your conduct in relationships. Not your activities in those relationships, but your conduct in those relationships. And I'm willing to talk to you about that after the meeting, but I would recommend you find a sponsor who's done this work and go through it that way. And also your fear inventory. That was a fucking huge one for me. Absolutely. They're talking about 100 forms of fear. I had so many forms of fear, it's just insane. And I continue to go through the steps. I continue to write down resentment inventories. I continue to write down fear inventories. Not because I'm a super healthy person. I'm getting better, but that's just because I do the work. And when you stop doing the work, it's like you quit exercising, and the next day it's okay. You know, well, your disease doesn't quit exercising. Your disease longs for you like the worst obsessive relationship you've ever had is how your disease longs for you. And it waits, and it does pull-ups, and it hangs, and it does sit-ups while it's hanging. And the second that you're not paying attention, it's anxious to bite a chunk of skin out of your face. It's waiting. No, you're laughing. Tell me it's not. Because when you go back out there, it doesn't get any better. It doesn't. It's maybe, what, it was a half a fifth of vodka the first time, and then you're out, and then it's two. And then you're telling yourself, well, I'm not going to do this. Well, you're doing 10 times that. And it doesn't get any better. And then you get dead. At least that's been my experience with people I've worked with, and I've seen people die of this disease. Step six. I'm jumping around. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. See, that's funny. I love that. All right, God, I'm ready. Remove these defects. Who the fuck are we to decide what our defects are? I mean, there's a bunch of stuff about myself I don't like. You know, I'm short, I'm skinny, I'm ugly, not real intelligent. There's a bunch of shit I would change. But the reality is God decides what your defects are. You know, because you might have something or you might have an experience that can help somebody else. That can help somebody else recover from this disease. Because each one of us has had a unique experience. I mean, granted, we're all humans and we have a relatively limited menu. But we've all had unique experiences. So that's what they're talking about. Because what I might think is a defect might help someone else. Like my constant cursing in this church might help someone. Seven, humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings. I've done that. And that, like I said, that's up to God to decide what your shortcomings are. That's a continual piece of work. And your sponsor will show you how to do that. And you work through it. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step eight. There's some humility in that. And as you go through your fifth, sixth, and seventh step with your sponsor, you have the list of people that you owe amends to. And just because you think you owe an amends or you want to be clear on something, that doesn't mean it's necessarily true. So you might think, I've done this, I harmed this person in this way, but that person seeing you is going to make them feel negative or whatever. Or you think you need to do this so you can be clear on your side of the street. Well, that's ego. So my point is, make sure that you bounce this stuff off your sponsor, somebody that's done the steps a few times, and somebody that has experience in that particular situation. Not their opinion. Action over insight and experience over opinion, because everybody has an opinion, and you know what? Nobody gives a fuck. I mean, somebody might, but hopefully not the person you're working the steps with. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And there is a lot of humility in that. And I have had good experiences with that, and I've had bad experiences with that. I have had to make amends to an ex-wife. I've had to make amends to in-laws. I've had to make a series of amends to my teenage daughters. And they don't remember when I drank and used, but they remember the divorce, and they remember me leaving. And they remember the conversations up to that and the conversations after that. And having the conversation with somebody who's upset with you, owning your part in it, and apologizing, and just listening to what they have to say, the humility in that, and the spiritual experience in that, it's painful, but it's worth it. And I don't know if you're anything like me, but I don't learn anything unless it's painful. It's got to hurt. And if it doesn't hurt, I don't learn it. You know, it's like a boxer. You got to take 6 or 7 shots to the head before you put your hands up. And then 6 or 8 more before you decide to, you know, bob and weave. I mean, that's just the way it is for me. 10, continue to take personal inventory. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. How's that? When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I don't know about you, but I didn't like being wrong at first. And the reality of that situation is, I'm wrong most of the time. And you know, that's okay. And it also says on page 84 with step 10, which is a great step, because after you've done the work and you get to step 10, then these are action items that you get to do all the time. You get to walk around. I'm not saying that you're going to do the steps and you're going to be the Dalai Lama. That's just not going to happen. I mean, maybe it will, and, you know, good for you, I hope. But that's just, it's like, I heard somebody say that we're like onions. There's layers and layers and layers. And you know, that's all fine and good. I wish they'd have picked a cooler vegetable or whatever. But there are layers. And the more times you read this book, the more times you do these steps, the more things you'll see. And I've been fortunate. I'm in a home group, and we're in the book, and we do the work. So step 10, continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. It says our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. It should continue for our lifetime. I hope I'm lucky enough to continue to practice these steps during my lifetime, because I know the experience I was having when I wasn't practicing these steps in my life, and I wasn't drinking and using, but I was just horrible. I was horrible to be around, and I don't ever want to go back there. And I hope you have a similar experience. The 11th step. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. I'm going to say that again because that's important. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. I had a problem at first because of my religious experience. Everybody said that God was supposed to look like this, or God was supposed to look like that, or God's going to be mad at you for doing anything that's fun. You know, I don't know about you, but that doesn't work for me very much. So right now, if I had to put a human form on my God, it would be, everybody seen The Matrix, right? The Oracle from The Matrix? That lady who's smoking cigarettes and baking cookies. Because my God has seen some shit. You know, my God doesn't look like Charlton Heston. You know, he doesn't have a long white beard, and he's not gonna be mad at me for, you know, masturbating, you know. I had to throw that in. I'm just saying. That's what works for me. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Okay, I skipped something there. Pardon me, I'm going to go back to page 84 and 88. Pardon me, 84 through 88. Because there is a simple set of instructions here that even I can understand. And if I can understand them, I know you can understand. On page 86, we're talking about the 10th and 11th step here. On page 85, it says, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy in this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And that says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. We were resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of others? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. For that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Then right after that, it says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Now, because I'm pretty dense, and it says, when we retire at night, and then it says, on awakening. You know, I retire at night every night, and now that I don't drink and use anymore, I wake up every day. Yeah, I mean, it's not coming out of a coma somewhere. You know, why am I strapped down? This sucks, you know. It's like, whoa, great, another day. So I would recommend that you read that every day. And at first it's going to be tedious, and it's going to be an irritation, but it'll definitely make things easier for you. It's been my experience. Okay, back to step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. In all our affairs. What do you think that means? Exactly. That's everything. That's everything you do every day. It's like, what? Are you kidding me? Everything I do every day. Yep. Everything you do every day. And it's doable. I'm not saying that you're going to be perfect at it right out of the gate, but it's definitely worth it. And my life has changed dramatically. What time am I done, Bob? It's 10 till. Is it 5 till?
Yeah.
That's good?
Yeah.
So I'll try and wrap this up. So, I hope you got something out of that. I hope that my character defects maybe have benefited you in some way. I don't have as many as I used to. Unless you talk to Doreen, she might disagree. But no, all kidding aside, the reality of this situation is we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state. And hopeless means you're going to die. And that's what's waiting for you out there. Because I don't remember anybody asking why I wasn't at the dealer's house, or anybody asking why I wasn't at X bar. But if you don't go to a couple meetings, people in your home group are going to be like, hey, what the hell's going on? Why are you not here? You need help? Talk to one of those people in your home group. They'll help you out. I do have a home group at Spearheads. And we do the steps and we do the work. And we'd love for you to come on over and join us. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I'm currently working the steps with Carl. He introduced me. When we first showed up, we've been here for 5 months. Doreen and I came across from San Diego. And we had been going to meetings. And we had been hearing a lot of the problem. And I don't think that anybody in here needs some assistance on how to drink or how to use. I think we all got that down pretty well. Or how bad it can suck out there if you don't do the deal. If you don't do the work, it doesn't get any better out there. And we were fortunate. We ran in to Bob and Lindsay at a meeting. And we heard them speak, and they're like, fuck yes! My people! Where have you been? And what I mean by that is, after you've done the work, and you start to develop a conscious contact with God, everything gets better. You're not different. We're not different. We're all exactly the same. Our stories are different. We've got a couple different experiences, maybe a couple of different skills. We've been around a little bit longer. We've had a little bit shorter time on Earth. But we're all exactly the same. You know, maybe we can help each other out. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys. Thanks.